And so also, I guess another part of the business would be the coyote and trafficking. And then sometimes after they get some folks up here, they would, they kind of hold them in slavery. Even more so, I guess one might imagine in say like the Asian folks coming over. But I think also, you know, you see sex trafficking and most certainly from Mexico and, you know, on south into Central America down there in Southern America. That have you had any kind of like investigation on something like that?
Yeah, you're hitting up on some good subjects here, because actually I did interview Coyote.
There's no mic.
And that was one of the stories that really stands out. This Coyote that, you know, allowed me to follow him and interview him, you could tell that he really didn't care about anyone. He just wanted to make money, and whoever he could make a profit on, he was going to make it. And he would give them off, send them off to areas where these other men would take control of these undocumented workers. Yeah.
Let me stop just for a minute. I'm sorry. I think we dropped here. We backflashed.
Sure.
We fell off.
No, I knocked off for about 10 seconds and reset it.
All right.
Okay, so we're good. Okay, so we're back then. Go ahead and tell us, go ahead and start over with that, just so we've got it all in full.
Definitely. You know, like I was saying, that's a good question you bring up about coyotes. I actually did interview a coyote back in the day, and that interview, he allowed me to follow him for quite some time. And I could tell that this guy didn't care about anybody. He was all about himself. He just wanted to make profit out of all the illegal immigrants that he was crossing through the river. He just wanted to make a profit on them. And he would send them off to different stash houses, and that's where these immigrants would be told lies, and they would be promised that they would get access north, because there's still other checkpoints in Texas that these immigrants had to pass. There's still other passageways that they had to get through, and they would be left at these stash houses, and they'd be promised things, but actually they were forced into, like you said, prostitution. The women were forced into prostitution. The men were forced to do jobs that they didn't want to do, and they were making money off those folks, and they didn't have any choice. So, yeah, definitely the coyote situation is a bad one to this day. I mean, it's another great moneymaker for the drug cartels. They have no, you know, feelings for the people that they're terrorizing. These people think that they're paying for a better life, and in retrospect, they're paying for a nightmare that they wish that they probably didn't pay for. So it's a horrible thing, but these coyotes, there's so many of them. They know that it's a good business for them to be out there taking advantage of these people looking for a better life.
This is very expensive to start out, and especially, you know, if you consider, say, maybe you're coming up from El Salvador, the expense and the exploitation all along that route. It's like a railroad for freedom. That's America, the beacon, cries out, you know, freedom and opportunity. And not only is the route here so corrupt and it's a mechanism of death. And then they get here, and there's all types of obstacles all along the way, crossing the border, and even getting like beyond that to the destination. Like you said, these checkpoints. I mean, you're coming up along the interstate, and you have to exit and go through a checkpoint. And you know, when I first started experiencing this many, many years ago, I'm like, you know, this is like Nazi Germany. And if my skin happened to be have a little bit more pigmentation, would I be asked for my papers, please? Well,
right.
That brings into race in a question and perception of so many people. I quit school 16, gone to work, and but most of my life, my young life, been working. Funny story. My stepmom told me one time, "You don't finish school, you'll be a ditch digger." And I'm doing irrigation, and I'm scooping around some dirt there, and I realized, yeah. But you know what? Who the workers have been for for decades here has, and even generations, has been the Latino. So I found myself in life working right alongside some really, really great people, people that took me into their homes, their lives, and, you know, welcomed me as a brother. Really, really great folks. And during these last 30-odd in the 40 years of this, that of my life, that I saw the shift, the, you know, the more and more this bad guy rising up in these people that were, you know, associated along this route to this northern route to freedom, in a sense, and then have fun arriving here. It speaks a lot to culture and to also to the engineering of culture along the way. And as is the black man shackled, so many times are other peoples of other ethnicity and their same barrio, respectively. Antonio, we had an issue of race as far as when Clive and Bundy was you know, the little quote come out there. That came from Jason Patrick. He's one of the guys that they have held in federal custody up there in Oregon right now without bail. And that will also speak to, you know, what is media and what is perceived as media and what is legally media, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. Hi, Graham. Couch surfing, you bet. Yes.
Armchair quarterback.
And so I met Antonio out there in Bunkerville. You interviewed me about that. Let's start out, though, about race. And would you say that societal norms is better now for as far as the man of color?
I don't think it's changed that much. I mean, it's gotten a little better, but I think we all still fall into the stereotypes, and it's something that I don't see changing, I guess, ever. I don't know if it's just if that's just the way we're born or what, but, you know, I still see a lot of discrimination happen from time to time, and it just doesn't seem to be getting any better. I just remember personally going up to Michigan as a student and always being told that I was there at the University of Michigan because of affirmative action, and I didn't understand what they were talking about as a 18-year-old kid, but I soon realized that I really wasn't well received there at Michigan because they believed that I was there, I was given a free pass, which I never thought was the truth. Obviously, I graduated with high marks and whatnot, but I was meeting with, you know, this affirmative action stuff, which I still scratch my head on. You know, I had good grades in school, but because of the color of my skin, they viewed me in a negative way, and that was kind of sad. That was a tough way to go to school, being looked down upon, and, you know, people thinking that I got a free pass wasn't a good feeling. And even to this day, as a reporter, you know, I still get stereotyped. You know, that some people always come up to me and say, "Do you speak English?" And I was born in Chicago, Illinois, so I always get a little offended by that question. The first language that I learned here was English, obviously. English was the language that was spoken in my household, and to be stereotyped that I don't speak English, it's always been something that I've never really appreciated, and I always get that to this day.
The Latinos have long been occupiers of the land in North America, well before the establishment of the country, and even after then, I mean, for generations up in Nebraska and in I mean, everywhere, even, you know, like take California, for instance, that culture has been there for a long time. There's mixed with, you know, the Aboriginal, that's not the right word, the Native folks, Indians, whatever, I'm sorry, she's the words that I said. Otherwise, I have a better word for it. But So there was Latin folks up north, and then I think sometime after the 80s, it was kind of more, and again, pardon for the words, another migration, immigration more of Mexican folks and others up to the north. And before it went really a big norm to have Mexican workers, a crew of Mexican workers on the job site. And I think today it's pretty much we see the Latin people having a bigger presence. Las Vegas is a perfect example of the American dream. There are so many Latino folks there that are so successful. It's a huge, huge community. The community is pretty much widespread through Vegas, but I mean there are certain areas that are isolated. So how do you reflect as far as the culture of Mexico and other countries being an influence here in the United States and over the time how they apply?
It is amazing, though. Like you said, here in Vegas, the Latino population, you could see the influence. You know, just about everywhere you look, there seems to be a Latino family in these neighborhoods. And you see the culture in certain ways. You see the celebrations that they usually have in Mexico being done here in Las Vegas. And as you said, it's the work. You know, I see these folks, they're out there on the construction site. They're out there, doing the lawn work. They're doing the manual labor stuff, and where that work is available, they're going to come and do it. So you definitely see the hard work that these people bring come to a community like Las Vegas, and it just seems to be growing and growing. The communities are getting a lot browner these days.
Yeah, indeed, and beyond just the workers now, Latinos are business owners. They're taking roles of leadership in community and business, politics, and so forth there in Vegas. So I think Vegas is a pretty great city. It's been my second home since 1969. Love going out there. How long have you been living in Vegas now?
I've been here for 3 years, and you know, as you were saying, the Latinos seem to be well receptive here in Las Vegas. They're being affected. I don't see much discrimination in the sense. I don't feel that the Latino people are being looked down upon in the sense.
Yeah, I think it's a good success story. Let's move on up to
423
at the ranch.
423.
We'll come back around. Yeah, we'll come back around. But just a reminder of that cannabis can, and that is the 420 report on the buzz. Yeah, we can report a little earlier quite extensively. So running back out to the ranch and the racism, Antonio. So you came up, you showed up out there, you interviewed me and some other folks, and the perception in mainstream media was that here's this, well, down here, I guess you'd call them in Arkansas, in the Ozarks, you'd say backwoods hillbilly or something. So whatever, there's a lot of similarities between the West and the South and a type of independence. And so I think cross-culturally, we have some confused perception of each other. And when you had spoke to me and on air there at Channel 3 in Las Vegas, I had replied about this racism. I think that words and the choice of words are sometimes isolated to geographic regions or even eras of time. And so I worked for this guy, and he called black folks, call them color people, and I'd always get him every time. I'd say, what color? He'd say, black. I grew up saying black, and so there's different words that sometimes are owned, and when somebody in the right category uses them, then they're out of place. So us about the perceived racism from your point of view, Antonio.
Well, out there on the ranch, yeah, I did definitely see some racism because I ran into the Minutemen. And I can't remember the name of the man, but he's, I think, one of the leaders of the Minutemen. I approached him, and I told him I was Antonio with Channel 3 News, and he says, you know, his name, and he says, I'm with the Minutemen, and I raised my hand out to shake his hand, and he says, I don't shake hands with you people. But as we know, the Minutemen, you know, they're against illegal immigration, and I, you know, I understand that they don't like that, but this guy was looking at me as a as an illegal immigrant, and I felt the hate from this man. I don't know why, you know, I guess I have to understand that he just doesn't like Hispanics in general, but this Minuteman, you could really feel the hate from this guy. He just said that he refused to shake my hand, and he didn't want to talk to me because he doesn't like my people, he said. And I was like, okay. And he told me that I needed to get out of his face because if I didn't, it probably would get ugly. So that's kind of some of the stuff that I encountered there at the time when I met up with you there at up in Bunkerville. But that was only from the minute. And then I'll just, you know, say that. There were other folks up there, the oath keepers and stuff like that, and they never... showed any
sort
of signs of hate or anything like that.
That's good. I think, yeah, even just to say it was certain individuals that, that represented that organization, I don't know that it would be prevalent throughout everybody, but...
No, it wasn't everybody. And, you know, even Clive and Bundy, I mean, I'm good friends with him, and, you know, he's a nice guy. You know, he's always been accepting of me, and he's allowed me on his ranch, and I've met up with his family, and they're good folks. I enjoy talking with them, and you know, I sat down there with them and ate the famous Bundy beets and all the good old melons they have out there. Very, very warm family. I never have anything negative to say about Clive and his son.
Yeah, really, really. I think salt of the earth people. The definition when you think back to the the Leave It to Beaver era when there was family values and so forth. So, a lot of respect for those folks out there. I went to school out in eighth grade in Moapa Valley and then came back as a grown teenager, 18 on, and a little bit there, and worked in Mesquite and in Glendale, and lived in Moapa Valley and then up in Mesquite as well also. And it's beautiful country up there. The region where he had his cattle roams, I wonder how much longer that will happen with him being held indefinitely, it looks like.
That's interesting. That's the question that we have. What's going to happen to Bundy Ranch? Because, like you said, it's such a beautiful area. When you go out there, it's peaceful, and the air just smells, you know, so good. And to see that rustic land, it just brings back memories of Texas. So it's always been a joy to go down there to Bundy Ranch to get, you know, a taste of the Old West as it is. And you just hope that everything's preserved, knowing that the whole Bundy, you know, just about, it seems like everybody, Ammon and Ryan and Clyden, they're in federal prison now. You just kind of wonder what's going to happen with the ranch. And you hope that, you know, nothing bad happens to that land that they've been on for many, many years.
Yeah, that's for certain. They have a big family, but, you know, I think the question being asked by many is, as the result of this occupying this resource center out there, that what's that going to do for squelching, you know, this whatever title you'd like to put on it, but this move against oppression, I guess is what I would call it.
Right. It'll be interesting. I mean, I was talking to Clive's bodyguard up there, his name's Skipper, and I remember him saying that he didn't want Clive to go over there to Portland, because he was afraid this was happening. As soon as it happened, I got a text from the bodyguard saying, oh, they've arrested Clive, and this doesn't look good, and I don't know what's going to happen to the land now. So it was I got quite an alarming message at the time that Clive got arrested.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's been a lot of discussion about this, and there's a lot of different perception of what it is that from the Bundy Ranch to Burns, what it is that people have tried to accomplish. I sit in and embedded there at the Bunkerville with the Bundys in 2014 and spent a few weeks. I set a camp. Beautiful place there on the river. It was an old motor hotel when that was the main highway before the interstate and stuff. And I guess back in the early days, in the early 1900s, a lot of folks, movie stars and stuff, stayed there and shooting movies and stuff. The Gold Butte region there is quite extensive. There's a lot of different ecological zones there, and it goes all the way over into where the Grand Canyon comes into to Lake Mead, and the Virgin River flows in. I spent a lot of time in that part of the country, way out. It's far back into the 80s when up there in the mountains with Bundy cattle up there. It takes a lot of land to run cows out there, and there was the big debate of the debacle of the tortoise and the cow.
Right.
Yeah, and actually it's shown that for studies over going back over 300 years that wildlife has actually benefited by proper management of cattle on open range. And the question is brought forth about these fees, and then the response from Clive Bundy is by what authority? And so that's the question I think is being lost in the whole narrative. But let's come back to because you not only had some racial abuse, but also media abuse. Santilli and Louis Prepper. I was watching them, and it looked like Prepper was kind of waiting for a cue. Whether they were in cohorts, I do not say that. But as one that was up to being a provocateur, I watched it evolve, and I filmed it. You can see me kind of nudging my way over to kind of head off Louis Prepper and his advance, and then they got the jeers up. Santilli tells you don't deserve the First Amendment or whatever else. You didn't have to write the Free Press. And I was like, wow, how stupid is that? And had a few jeers, but there was John. He come up and puts a hand on your shoulder, and I know John well. I know from him it was a reassurance. And I had a left next to your side as we go on up, and then towards the end of the video, and shake your hand. And I say I don't believe there's any such thing as a bad question. So you were, and it's all on video for anybody who want to listen. There at the What Matters Worldwide YOLA site, and you can see where people hold their prejudice, whether it be in racial or ideology, ideology. So when that was going on, where you were kind of, and first of all, let me say that you've been down in some places that we talked to earlier. That was pretty light intimidation compared to some situations that I know that you have been in your time in media, especially dealing with that kind of those issues along the border. So, how did you feel? I mean, you held your and people were jeering. Not very many. There was five or six people, I would say, but by and large, the number of people that were in attendance, this was just like some mealy mouths, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things with me, and this question always comes up, people ask me if I was scared or anything like that. I'm just going to be honest. I think I'm one of those guys that's kind of a knucklehead, because I never think anything bad's going to happen. And during that time, when these people surrounded me, I just thought that, nothing violent was going to happen, because it was broad daylight, and what are they going to do to me? I guess that's what was going through my mind. Now, here I am asking questions about slavery, it seemed like things were getting out of hand, but I knew if I kept my calm that I'd be okay. I knew that it was a very heated time, and people were upset about a lot of things, but I never felt that my life was in danger or anything to that effect. I knew that it was just a lot of tense situations at the time, and I know that some people were upset with the questions that I had, but I knew that the people there were pretty, you know, level-headed, and that nothing was going to get out of hand. So I've always been lucky. I'm a man of faith, and I always feel that the good Lord has my back. So, there's nothing to fear. You know, when it's your time, it's your time. That's the motto I go with. And you know, like you said, I've been able to deal with the drug cartels and all the violence in Mexico. And, you know, I always feel thankful that I'll be okay.
Yeah, I saw the confidence that you have. And I think as I observed other folks, just like I observed the ill contents, I also saw the observation of others that would not had they stood back and watched, and had there ever been a problem, then it would have been stopped real quick.
Yeah.
Everybody there was very vigilant, and I do know there were some provocateurs there, but overall, the people that came out there in support were they're generally concerned about the state of the nation, and for some folks it's a little closer than others. I mean, when we have these Guidos coming and acting with force to make sure that you adhere to this legal as law, and using policy as law, and to the point of killing you. Let's move forward. I was going to ask you some more about those questions, but that's all documented. For those interested in that, I've provided that link, and you can see that video in its entirety. That's actually the second part of a two-part video of the entirety of Clive and Bundy's address, as far as the addressing back this so-called racism issue. And like I say, I think it's just perhaps like you might say that occupying that refuge out there was a bad decision or a bad choice of action. So sometimes, you know, we do as we do, and our words are also reflective, and when our vocabulary is what it is, and that's the choice of words. It's all a matter of choice, you know. We've got to choose each day how we proceed and hope to do a better job in presentation. It was asked how long I've been doing this radio. About 3 years, I guess, now. You've been in media for a lot longer than that, and you have undoubtedly, you're there with people, face-to-face on the street, firsthand. So you have, I am most certain, an incredible perception of what actual the society and life is all about. Definitely, we could have get some revelation as far as how life really is from you. I appreciate your perspective, and but let's talk some about the occurrence up there in Burns, Oregon. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I just think that I was a little surprised that the Bundys had gone up there, because I had always talked to Clive, and he said he was just going to keep his issues here local in Nevada. And then when I found out that his sons were up there and he'd given them the blessings and he had told them to go up there, I was kind of surprised that he was going outside of Nevada to help out these other ranchers there. And I asked Clive, and I remember telling him, you know, how long do you plan on having your sons go out there? And he says, as long as it takes. He said that the goal was to get the government to give the land back to the people, and he was adamant about that. And he said he was willing to, he was willing to pay by getting arrested. And now with the work, it's kind of interesting to see that's what ended up, where he and his sons ended up in jail. He had told me that he was willing to pay that way by being incarcerated, if that's what had to be done. It had to be done that way. So it's just one of those things where you kind of scratch your head, and it's kind of disappointing because he's driving now in federal custody, and who knows when he'll get out, and if so, it's just one of those things that we see.
So how do you feel about, as far as, like, how this is coming down to where more or less a protest has been legalized into description as crimes against the government. And the actual protest is against these very actions. And now we have to include members of the press that are also being detained. And as a Latino, I know that you would have knowledge of, say, like Argentina and the disappearances. And are we going to see that one day here, that dissidents are locked up? And you, especially as a man of faith, I know that you speak for truth. You hope to share truth with the world, and that is my judgment of your heart, that you're a good man. And perhaps one day it will come down that even you would be censored or given the choice of censor, self-censor, or perhaps being a disappeared. And to think it's far-fetched that it could ever happen here in America it means that one would have an improper understanding of history. So what are your thoughts on that? What are the possibilities of our future as media and as just individuals speaking in protest?
You know, it's scary to think about that, but I see that the media's rights, they seem to be getting more and more diminished with just actions. For instance, like police, they keep the media way back, and sometimes you see just local citizens getting close to the crime scene, and they're able to get up and close, but when it comes to the media, they're not allowed to do that. So I see that as a bad sign in that example, and you just get the sense that the government would be more willing to limit the rights of a free press. You hear that. I've heard rumors or I heard that there's a push to make it a law where it's against the law to be shooting a police officer. You can't be videotaping a police officer. You could be in prison for that. I think they're trying to draw some legislation, you know, into something like that. So that goes to show that the outlook doesn't seem good. I guess to put it in the bottom line, that it doesn't seem like we're becoming a more freer nation with the press. We're becoming more closed and more restricted. So, you know, I just hope that what you were talking about earlier doesn't come to fruition, but it's a possibility.
Kind of scary, indeed. So I have a question for you from Lonnie Clark on UCY.TV, The Age of Vision. She is an activist. She lets her voice be heard and talking about issues of the day. And there's so many issues. I mean, and if you don't have an issue, I think that you're amiss and should choose one and find a wrong that you can write somewhere. But I bet her that the answer to this would be yes. Mm-hmm. And she said that, and I say you do, she said she did, you wouldn't know about uranium and the dumping of waste and that on natives, especially on their lands. Around Las Vegas, we have the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste up there, and there's other issues. So what do you know about what this going on out there, at least in this part of the world where you're at now?
That's a good question. That's a scary thing, because just a couple of months ago, there was some sort of radiation explosion involving some sort of barrels not too far from Yucca Mountain. This is an area probably about an hour and a half away from Las Vegas, and there was a radiation cloud due to this explosion of these underground uranium barrels. So that definitely scared the small community there. They were frightened that their water table would be contaminated. And the scary thing is that the city officials there, they kind of left people in the dark for a couple of hours as they stopped traffic to go through that area. People were in the dark. They didn't know what was going on. And as a journalist, to be sent to go over there, you had your questions yourself, wondering, what am I getting myself into? You know, and then there's Yucca Mountain. The fight continues there. People here in Las Vegas don't want that stuff out there in our backyard. But there's a chance that we may not have a choice. So the uranium question is a big question that looms here for Nevada. It's something that people don't want, but the federal government seems that they need to bury it somewhere, and Nevada may be the place where it has to be.
Well, there's actually these dump sites all across the country, and there's some that are getting some more attention, like in St. Louis, Missouri, this Coal Creek. They've got a dump site, and there's an underground fire, and it's the fire is encroaching very close now to the underground storage of nuclear materials that go back to the the Manhattan Project. Some of that. So I mean, there's places all across the country, all these nuclear facilities that are leaking radiation, and you know, we're being contaminated to the point where the narrative is now being given that Ormesis is a good thing. A little exposure to radiation is good for you. And the issues of Fukushima. So let me ask you, as far as in mainstream, what do you see being covered as far as these incidents?
Well, actually, it's one of those things in news. I just got a word from my photographer that there's some sort of shooting or murder that they're calling me on, and they want me to head out to that situation that's gotten kind of ugly. I'm being told right now that
okay.
The violence
in
Las Vegas is getting kind of out of hand here.
All right. Hey, Antonio, thanks for joining in, and we'll catch up later. I'll send you the link to this archive, and it's my pleasure to talk to you and an honor.
I really appreciate you giving me the time, and thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Unfortunately, the violence here in Vegas, it's been a daily thing, and they got me running to it.
I got it. I know. My cousin's a cop out there, so, yeah. This salt touches is close, some of us more than others. Thanks, Antonio. We'll catch up to you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Antonio Castanello. Let me say his name right. Castellan. Pardon me, Antonio. Thanks. Thanks so much for joining. He's a general assignment reporter for NBC affiliate News 3 Las Vegas. KSNV TV, News 3 Las Vegas. So I think that was a really a great interview, and we took the direction mostly that I had hoped it would go. I think I can show even where mainstream the people that man or woman that occupies that position of observation of standing as witness and being able to take it and bring it back for presentation to the public has a great importance. As I was saying earlier to the question of I've been doing radio, I guess, for about 3 years now, and many of you will know that I'm by no means some professional or a great orator or anything like that, but I as my duty, Not the smart pill variety. You can go back to the old joke there. The smart pills, rabbit turds. They taste like crap. Working already. So yeah, hey, you got to chew it to digest it, right? And sometimes you get a little of that special brownie mix, and hopefully it's the good brownie mix. And that's the salute at 10:00. We say 4:20 from the Buzz Bee. Well, let me go back over here to, I guess what I did. I had the wrong date set for this, and I didn't discover it till this morning. You can laugh at me, Grimner. I'm such an idiot. Revise, and sometimes I forget to revise my edits. So, yeah, I did correct that to February 26th. That is today, Friday, noon central. It was noon. Now it's 10 to 1. Next hour, and we'll be having I guess Lori Ann call in here directly. But right now, hey, let's bring the Flash Man Dude into the mix. How do you two do?
With my mouth closed, if I remember.
I'm a smacker.
Mm.
Poopy all falling out of my mouth, crumbs running down my shirt. It's like, boy, that's good. That's a best tasting crackers I ever did have. The Zim Ritz, is that a new kind of Ritz? They're all square, but I mean, it tastes like a round cracker. Mm. Who knew?
Well, you're the cracker. You should know.
I am a cracker. A cracker, not the cracker. Of course, the one and only cracker resides at the UCY.TV chat. Long time resident chatter and a part of UCY.TV. So I see some folks that have popped over there. I see Miguel, Tomato, Tomato, and Shirley, you just, and Logan, the T-Bird himself, Logan Hawk, Desert Hawk. And back over here at reallibertymedia.com, we have, look at all the fine folks, 26 folks in here gathered for the chat. Of course, have to count me twice.
We always do.
Thank you. So what do you think about our interview, man?
Well, actually, the truth of it is I have a little to say about it.
Good.
As the offspring of an English Jew and an American Mexican, I think I have quite an opinion about this whole racial thing. It's all bullshit. There you go. Dead silence? Wow.
Well, I didn't know what to say. Listen, let me hand you the mic for one moment, and I need to get up, because I hear a dog barking, so I'll be right back.
Oh, you got to go. Yeah, he's got to go take care of the pets. Got it. There
see,
you
go. Hey. Hold on, boy. Hey,
wow. All this racial stuff, it's the person and the group you're in at the time when shit happens. Because I think basically we're all raised to be racist one way or another, whether you want to admit it or not, because we see color unless we're blind. And we hear differences in the way people speak. And one skin color will get more attention than another. It's just the way things are. And what's fucking it up the most is forcing people to accept things that they don't want to accept. So hurry back from your dog beating contest and take this mic back. I don't really feel like talking about it. I just think it's a lot of shit that it's kind of thrown at us, and you pick and choose what you want to play with. Because, I mean, you can't tell what people are by looking at them anymore. Everybody's got some background that they find out in their 40s. Hey, you had a black cousin. well, maybe not that extreme, but something to that like, where you're surprised about your real heritage. And I don't know what's that shit about, 6 degrees of separation. There's a million ways to look at all this crap. And I think it's like it's a good form of divide and conquer. Keep us arguing about stupid shit that doesn't have any value at all in your daily life. And the next thing you know, you're at war with the Middle East because they're a bunch of God-fearing, or what is that, heathen towelheads or something? I don't fucking know. I don't keep up with much of it. And there you have it. So, wow, you really hit me with a shitty one because, I don't like it much. I mean, hell, I married a white girl here that was coming up on 2 years ago, and I never, when I get mad at her, I never say, you know, you're fucking white. I mean, I don't know. People are just whatever they think they are, and it doesn't really much make a difference to me. So with that, crap, now I'm running out of things to fucking say. Thanks a lot there, Captain Vince. He left me out to dry here with a terrible topic. Let's see. Talking with would be my preference. Okay, Juana, I don't know. Wow. There you fucking are. You left me with a shitty topic. I ran out of crap.
Yeah, big baby. Here I am, folks. We're back. I had to take a little trip out into the wilderness down under. Well, at least from down under business, that is. well.
Did you remember to wipe?
No, I just had to shake it. Shaking the balls, I'm shaking it.
Anyway, what I think.
Wait a minute. Now, I've got to ask you. I've got to ask you.
Oh, you're going to ask me? Okay.
I'm going to ask you a question. You calling me a dumb hillbilly?
Yeah, twice.
Thank you. I just need to get that straight. Because is that a racist type of deal? Because really, I'm not racist. I'm more of a Wyatt.
Well, no, it's not racist.
That's being white with an opinion. Being, let's see, I'm trying to be funny. Being white with it, asking why. Why? 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 Why the lack of pigmentation, okay? First of all, is that not racist to call me white? Because I am not white.
Well, you sound white, mister.
Well, that's what...
right, and it's all that... All that preconceived notions about shit that was stuck in our head by other people that we didn't even know they were doing it when they did it. And here we are in the 21st century. We're all pretending we don't see color and we're not racist when we really all are.
And that from the e-racist.
Well, yeah, because I'm at least honest about being an electronic racist.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the internet... is that you don't have to look at the fucking people that you're pissed off at.
Right. We'll be expecting a phone call and be prepared.
To switch?
Hit the kill button, stop that one, reset the next one. You need to add the title, put B after the same title.
B. At the end of news? Boss.
Yeah, and then that'll get me where I need to be. Did you have two recordings from the first hour?
Yeah, I really fucked that up.
No, actually, make those two A and B and make this one C then.
Okay. All right. A, B, and that's complicated.
So, y'all, we did a little pre-show if y'all was...
That was fun.
Some folks was.
That was
we won't be putting that one up. That was just for fun and posterity.
So you really don't believe that you're a racist?
No, but I'm prejudiced. Everybody's prejudiced.
Right. Oh, okay. Racist, prejudiced. What? It's just a fancy.
No, racist is hating somebody because they have a other than skin color as do you, or perhaps because of their ethnicity, or perhaps their country of origin, because we don't like no origins. Oranges are okay, but oranges definitely no. And with that, I'd say, hey, sir, say orange.
Hey, so is there a lot of black and Mexican gangs there in rural Arkansas?
No.
Oh, okay. So just all a bunch of redneck gangs? Do they, go noodling with foreigners or what?
No, but we play foreigner, though, sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
Cause I'm a dirty white boy.
You just
dirty
said you
white want... boy. Put that on the freaker's ball. Grim. No, just kidding. That really don't fit. Grim plays some killer music, man. He's I've loved and introduced him to some awesome grooves, man.
Hey.
Grim and Moosey. Hey. On Freaker's Ball tonight. Stay tuned. Real Liberty Media. Hey, look, Joanne Eubanks. Hey. That's a hillbilly gal. She's a friend of mine. She just shared my post.
Really?
What do you think about that?
Did she write it on the wall?
No, it's a GIF, a GIF thing, and you click it, and it's got panda rocket. So,
really?
I am a panda. And guess what it says? FTW. It actually spells out. If you see Kay, tell her I said hi.
No, I won't do that. I refuse to do that.
F-U-C-K, tell her, I said, how do, gal, where you been?
How many ways is there to say no?
No. No means no. That's my purse.
Barbara, I'd like to know what you're doing with that purse, Barbara. Is it got the batteries in it, Barbara?
It goes good with your shoes.
Let's kill this one, baby. Kill this one and start it back up.
All right, bye.
I got an inbox over here. Nope, it's not for man, but I'm going to go say, hello.